Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm not really at Fadley's, although I wish I were, but I was recently, and you'll find that out when I bring it to you. Here it is. There it is, the Fadley's Crab Cake. The Crab Cake Tour has begun right now. I got the Fadley's shirt. I wish we were there, but I was there yesterday, but we've shipped them all in. Don Moeller, what a journey we've been on. And I know this week was a tough week for you, the third anniversary of losing your friend Kevin Kamenetz. It was in the aftermath of you becoming the Baltimore County executive that we got together and said, let's try to lift Baltimore up. Let's do something with this Be More Positive thing we worked on. Let's create Baltimore Positive. Now it's begat this Crab Cake Tour. And although we can't be at Fadley's, this is going to be one of your favorites because these folks are fun. We always have a good time.
Look at our cast today. We've got one of the finest congressmen in the United States, congressman and the third district right here from Baltimore, John Sarbanes. And he's going to regale us. He's done it before with some of his Fadley stories. Particularly, I love his story about his brother-in-law. And then we've got Bill and Nancy Devine, just famous worldwide, the one and only Miss Nancy, who came up with the Jumbo Lump Crab Cake, and their daughter, Damien Harn.
This one right here, just the one you're talking about?
Yeah, the congressman and I don't have one of those.
Now, I'm very confused about why I don't have one of those in front of me.
Yours is right here. I'm shipping it to you.
I'm looking for mine, too, congressman.
Well, we're doing a crab cake tour, and I was on the line with my friend Jason Cole, who's a sports writer, just wrote a book on John Elway. If you're into such things, please go read it. And he's one of these foodies. He lives down in Florida. He went to Stanford. He's been all over the country. And he thinks of the Maryland – every time he comes home with me, he talks about Maryland crab cakes. And I told him – because we talk food all the time. And I said – Jason, we've asked everybody this question. If you come to Baltimore, where do you get your crab cake? And I said, Jay, I'm doing a tour. He said, I hope you're starting at Fadley's. So I know, Nancy, you'll be happy to hear that. Well, that
I love hearing it.
Well, the reputation, you know, Bill, we don't usually let people on with cigars, but I'm going to make an exception for you. All right. How are you? Damien, how are you keeping them out of Lexington Market and running that place down there right now?
I nailed their feet to the floor in the other room so that they couldn't come in.
Well, Bill and Nancy and Damien, the congressman, he shared with Nestor and me. Tell him a story, congressman, again, and for our listeners. It's not that your brother-in-law doesn't love you, but he evidently loves something else a little more than you and your wife.
Well, my brother-in-law lives in Texas. This is my wife's sister husband. And occasionally they'll come visit. But there have actually been times, he loves Fadley so much that there have been times when they've driven from Houston and they drive into Baltimore, and before they come visit us or visit my mother-in-law, they go to Fadley's and get their crab cake.
Yeah, we like hearing that.
You got people driving straight from Houston to get crab cakes. If that's not an endorsement, I don't know what is.
Well, I mean, if it must make you feel better, you can just say that that's the appetizer and the family's really the meal, you know, on the way home.
Yeah,
if you,
exactly. Maybe. Well, before we have Nancy walk us through how this whole thing began, Congressman, I think when I think of the intersection of politics and families and small business, Fadley's is the poster child for me. Maybe you can, for all of us, Bill, Nancy, Damien, Nestor, our listeners, talk to us a little bit about what has happened so far under the Biden administration to try to help folks like, you know, the Devines and the Hans and small businesses all across the country to really recover from this awful 18 months.
I appreciate that. I mean, you know, from the beginning of this thing, small businesses and the smallest of businesses were the ones that got hit the hardest, as we know. And a lot of them have not survived. They didn't come through the storm. Many have. And, you know, Fadley's is obviously powering through this very difficult storm we faced with the pandemic, the economic fallout. But when Joe Biden came in, obviously, as part of his American Rescue Plan, which we passed in Congress, thank God, one of the key elements of that was to continue to provide relief support to small businesses. But again, try to reserve a significant amount of those dollars for the smallest businesses and figure out how to get it to them. Because, you know, it was bumpy in the beginning. We had the CARES Act last year, again, put a lot of dollars out for businesses. But some of the bigger businesses, frankly, who didn't need the help, they grabbed that off the top. And it left some of the smaller businesses hanging. So we wanted to make sure in this next round that came through the American Rescue Plan that there was more directed funds that could reach our small businesses. So that's the one dimension. The other is getting those vaccines out there, because the president understood there was no way we were going to get back to any kind of normal if we couldn't get to where people felt more comfortable coming into establishments and so forth. So as a result of the guidance yesterday from the CDC, and then, you know, here in the state of Maryland, new guidance beginning to evolve around wearing face masks, social distancing, what the policy will be in terms of being able to be outside at a business, but also indoors at a business. We're beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of small businesses and establishments and so forth being able to get back on their economic footing. And a lot of that's coming from the uptake in the vaccines, which gives everybody more confidence that they can get out there and participate, return to economic activity without being at risk. So we got to be steady about this and deliberate and careful as we come back online, if you want to call it that. But this huge effort to get the vaccines out there over the last 2-3 months that the Biden administration really focused on is clearly making a difference as well. So you put all that together, like I said, light at the end of the tunnel here, great opportunity moving forward for small businesses like Fadley's. And I just want to say to them, to Bill and Nancy and Damie, thank you for holding on for the benefit of your customers, for what it means to the life of the city, the reputation of the city, and to my brother-in-law, clearly.
How about, hey, Bill, Nancy, and Damie, you know, what a great opportunity. Talk about this past year. Bring this past year home to our listeners as well, owners.
I can say a little bit about that. It was, it's been my whole life at Fadley's. I started as a young teenager helping my parents down there. And so I, having to go through this was like dying, because you just couldn't believe that. I mean, it's our life's blood. And we spent so much time in the city. My husband, especially, getting involved with everything that had to do with the city more than we did in Howard County, where we lived for 50 years. But we took part in so many things. If we all remember Don Schaefer, he was one of our best customers, and he liked Fadley's crab cakes so much that he sent me to Europe as a mayor and then as governor, where I took Maryland crab cakes to try to entice people to come. So like Congressman Sarbanes, we brought people to BWI when it was first opening with its international division.
Status, yeah.
And for 10 years, I visited England, Germany, Germany especially, because Frankfurt was our sister city. And so,
well, crab cakes go with beer too. That's good.
Yeah. Oh, and it was unbelievable. It got bigger and bigger. And of course the Red Cross benefited from it. It was all tied up with charity. the airlines went along with it. And it was just a marvelous time. And to see people that were just so thrilled with our crab cakes. And so, I mean, it was so exciting to me. And then, of course, having people, as he mentioned, I had four women one time come in. They flew from Atlanta. It was their lunch date. They flew from Atlanta to come to Fadley's and then flew back. So, I mean,
did they not know about the shipping or no?
they wanted the experience. They want the experience of walking in there. And we're going to have a difficult time recreating that when Lexington Market reopens, but we're going to do our best.
The new market.
The new market that's coming along, because the atmosphere in there is one that's grown for many, many years it took to build this. And of course, I hated to see a lot of the old businesses that we remember growing up in Baltimore going out of business because it became difficult for them, I guess, to hang on as the younger people came along. They didn't want to do it. But luckily, Bill and I have a daughter, three daughters that are going to continue as best they can with the name and to keep the reputation of Baltimore and Maryland crab cakes at the top of the list. So with Jamie opening soon in Catonsville and my other daughters going to continue with Fadley's in Lexington Market, all our work, I feel, is going down the drain, so to speak, because once you close your doors, it's very hard to get those people back. And luckily, again, we have a reputation that goes farther than Baltimore, because most of our customers at this time frame are tourists. And we are just filled with people from all over the country and even from Europe, Japan, China. It's just amazing to me when they come in and tell me where they're from. And I just, and they leave with this wonderful feeling of, and so many of them tell me they love Baltimore and they love the people in Baltimore because they feel like the people are so warm and, They just extol the virtues of Baltimore while they're in there talking to us. So it's just been, it just keeps you going. I'm 85, Bill is 89, and we still go into work as much as possible. Now, this year was a real hit because they didn't want 80-year-olds running around on the streets. They kept us all.
I'm sure that was easy, right, Damon?
Did you have to tie Bill up? Bill, they have to tie you up or what?
Just about.
He was not happy.
No, Congressman, he was not a happy camper.
Your district, you have one of those unique district, Congressman. Catonsville's one of the few places you don't represent. Your district does Baltimore, Howard, Anne Arundel, Montgomery. I'm guessing when you hear the emotion in Nancy's voice, you've heard those stories day in and day out for the past 18. Talk about the impact it's had on you as an elected official.
Well, and those stories early on were what motivated us to come up with these large relief packages out of Washington. You know, when they do the write-ups on these things that we pass, it's all broad strokes. You know, it's the $1.9 trillion of money going out the door for nutrition, mortgage, rental assistance, small business assistance, stimulus checks, unemployment, all those things. But it's really about what's on the other end of the pipeline when you break it down. It's about a family where the breadwinner lost their job and they need that unemployment check. It's about another family that's renting a unit somewhere and they can't afford to pay and how do they stay in their home. It's about families that are living on the edge and need that nutrition assistance. And so hearing the stories, listening to them carefully is what enabled us to kind of figure out where do we need to put that assistance. So, and that's kind of what the job is. I'm kind of describing the job overall. We listen carefully to the challenges people face, and then we try to kind of roll that up into broad policy recommendations that we can go put into law to make a difference in people's lives. That's really the definition of government serving the people. Sometimes we do it well, sometimes we don't do it so well, but the important thing is that you have dedicated public servants that are trying to do their best to lift people up at difficult times. And we got the opportunity, unfortunately, because of this pandemic, to test our capacity to meet the needs of the American people. And I think, you know, we did our best under very difficult circumstances. Has not been a perfect delivery of support and relief to people across the country. But I think many would tell you, both small businesses and families, that that lifeline has been there and it's helped us get through it. And it's very satisfying when you can talk to people, whether it's a small business, like in this instance, or whether it's a family, and hear them say, we're making it. We're getting to the other side of this challenging time. That makes it all worth it. But, you know, it's a challenging time in the country, in the world right now. The spirit of Americans is we hang together in tough times. And Fadley's is an example of that, because it's not just, I mean, it's not just a place to go get a crab cake. It's got a feeling to it, an atmosphere to it, that's like family. That's I think one of the signatures. And you know, Nestor's going to go out on the road and start sampling other crab cakes, and you know, that's only one dimension of it, right?
Well, that's the measurement of all of this. And I think when I thought this, by the way, we're Congressman John Sarbanes here, the entire Fadley's family, Damie's here, Bill's here, Nancy's here, the Hahn and Fadley family, Don Moeller, of course, doing a Baltimore Positive. Our first stop on the crab cake tour. There's only, we know where we're going. This is where it is.
He's here, doing it to us again, Congressman. He's absolutely
shipped to you. Come on now.
If he does that one more time, I'm coming over there and getting him from him.
Well, we used to see your dad occasionally too.
Oh, I'm sure.
By the way, John, I want to say this before I transition, because I do have a direction of small business I want to go. My dear friend Dennis Colatzos does radio with me as a sponsor at Coons Ford, and he told me a crazy story about your father rescuing him and keeping him in this country, and he is indebted to you, and he just wanted me to tell you that. So I want to make, while it came up, thank you for that, Nancy. You reminded me. The small business part of this, right, for the crab cake thing, I start to think back at the barn in the 1990s. It's my original sponsor back in the 90s, where I did radio shows with Ravens players, Orioles players before the Ravens. We were Art Donovan, Governor Schaefer came out with John Moog after we stole the Ravens to tell the story about how we got the Cleveland Browns to come here. So all of this history of eating crabs, I had Ray Lewis's first crab cake was with me at the barn in 1996. So introducing people to crab cakes was something I always did. I've lived downtown for 18 years. I would always walk over to Fadley's, and I told Nancy this when I met, and Bill, I was a little intimidated by you guys were on TV. There were tourists and people. I'm like, I don't need to go over there, and I'm Nasty Nester. I do sports, you know. I just ate your crab cakes and enjoyed them, you know. And small businesses have been at the heart of everything I've ever done from the beginning, and it's always been people like Bill and Nancy and generations of people. This is my 30th anniversary, which is why we're doing 30 crab cakes in 30 days, 30 true blue crab cakes, Damien, Maryland crab cakes in August. We're starting this tour. We're beginning this here. We're going to be moving around each and every week, always sort of measured against my sponsors, Fadley's, Costas, the people that have been with me me forever. But I was over Costas last week. My mother and I went there for Mother's Day every year. And I'll start to cry like you, Nancy, so I'm not going to go there. But my mom's gone, right? So I still go to Costas on Mother's Day. And I'm over there and I'm thinking about Nick and Pete and local people, people like you. And I think about, that's everyone that's ever made a crab cake for me in this state. Every place I'm not going to corporate places or chain places. God bless them. We need them too. But every place I will have a crab cake, there's a Bill and a Nancy or a Damie or a Sarbanes family or a Moeller family or an Aparicio family, families of immigrants, families of people that have been here two centuries, eat muskrat like you, Bill. But this is why I'm doing this, is to reach out and find real people. And Damien, this is where I want to bring you in, because you got all over me last year. We got masks on. We can't get crab out of the Chesapeake Bay. How can we not harvest this out of our own bay? And you started telling me stories. Next thing you know, I'm on the phone with the Clayton family, where I'm going to be on a boat with people this summer in August. I'm going to get up in the morning, go out with crabbers. I'm going to go to the pickeries if they'll let me in, the few that are left. Damie, tell me about the last year, year and a half, because this was already a challenge for the industry here, for the state, for the Bay. We've had Martin O'Malley inside your place talking about taxes and things that supported oysters and grasses and crabs. I want you to talk about your business the last year and a half and the specific challenges you're having all the way around, from EBT trying to open a second location and wood going up to $50 a piece. It's been nuts.
It has. It's been the challenges have been more than just getting the customers in. It's getting product. The crab industry has been, they are particularly in trouble, really. And this one of the biggest issues, and the congressman touched on it, is that the pickers and the processing rely on visas, and they're not considered an essential food source. And one of the reasons that they're not given an essential food source status is because they don't grow the crab. It's wild caught. It's the, you know, crab and seafood are the last wild caught industry.
It's the last major food industry to rely on the hunt.
Yes.
We can't raise it. We have to hunt it.
And you know, there's weather conditions, there's seasons, there's all types of restrictions. And the the processors rely on mostly Mexican and South American workers who come up for just the season, 6 months at a time, on a 6 month visa.
These are my people, by the way, Venezuelan. Lake Maracaibo is where the blue crab. I've done the research on this, Nancy. You'd be proud of me. So would you, Don.
And they're, and usually the seasons, you know, south of the equator are separate, you know, different than ours. So it's been a symbiotic relationship since the mid 80s. And these are skilled workers. They're not somebody that you train in one season. They come year after year. They play by the rules. They go back. They come back again. And the past 2 years have been particularly difficult. We used to have Senator Mikulski kind of in our corner, making sure that there was an exemption for this industry. But as of late, it has fallen to the wayside, and it has created havoc, not only for the processing, but for all crabbers. Because what happens is, when crabbers go out to crab, they may have half of their catch as what they call, you know, good enough to go in a basket and be taken to crab houses to steam and sell as steamed crabs. The other half to three quarters are what they call factory crabs. Factory crabs are ones that, you know, don't have any legs on them, or they're small females, or they're, you know, have a half a shell or whatever. They throw them in a separate basket, and that's the majority of the catch. And they have to take those to a processor. Last year, a lot of the processors were not able to open. And without those processors opening, the cost is double. And the crabbers would have to throw half their crabs back in. And you can imagine, you wouldn't ask anybody to throw their half their work back. So a lot of the guys weren't even going out. The crabbers were selling their boats. They were getting rid of, you know, their equipment. So COVID really caused us to really lose a link in the chain, because these guys, these crabbers, they learn from their fathers, from their uncles, from, you know, generation to generation. It's not an industry that somebody just, you know, graduates from high school and says, I'm going to go be a crabber.
Well, that's one reason I'm going down there is I want to see what it is. I want to see what they, I mean, I've eaten them forever. I want to remind Congressman, I have a couple here too. I just want to remind you that, we're shipping them, I promise you. But where do these come from? These look pretty. Nancy mixes them up. You know, this isn't as easy as it looks, right? Literally.
No. And you got to realize those two are made out of jumbo lump. And there's only two pieces of jumbo lump, two jumbo lumps per crab. So, you know, if you've got, 20 jumbo lump in there, you're talking about 10 crabs to make one crab cake.
That's mind-boggling, Dave. You've told me that before, and I've shared that. And I can see the congressman shaking his head. 10 crabs to make one jumbo lump crab meat.
The amount of work from the crabber to the processor to the truck bringing it up to us making it to get it to you is an exorbitant amount of work. And this year, the prices are up by 40%. Because this visa problem is really rocking the industry. And I'm really fearful that we may not have it anymore.
Is that not getting better, Damie?
No, it's getting worse.
It's not within the right realm. Right, Damie? Our seafood industry is not where it belongs.
Correct.
Congressman, is that a federal issue or a state issue?
You mean in how it's designated, that particular industry?
Correct. Well, it is not.
It's not. Yes. Who was the guy in that wanted to put us with the other animal?
I know that.
Chuck Grassley.
Congressman knows about that. Is whether that it should actually be an H-2B with. Along with, you know, health hotel workers and construction workers and landscapers, or if it should be with the food industry as an essential food source.
Well, look, you got three things intersecting here that cause a challenge. One is figuring out, just as a general matter, what's the proper category or designation in which this particular industry should fall that makes the most sense. Then you have the backdrop of an overall system, you know, immigration system that's fundamentally broken, that spills onto it. And then you add in the pandemic over the last year plus, which put other restrictions in place, and sometimes not necessarily thought through, but just kind of a immediate knee-jerk reaction to the situation of the day.
Correct.
You put all those things together. It's a very complicated terrain for businesses like Fadley's to navigate. So I can certainly appreciate the challenge there, and the challenge for us as policymakers, particularly coming out of this, is how do you rationalize all this in a way that makes sense for the business that's trying to deliver the product here. So it's something we have to keep focusing on. And this is a perfect example of what I was talking about a minute ago, which is you got to listen, you got to get the input and the perspective from people who are actually on the ground, because sometimes we design things on this end of the pipeline that we think makes sense, but when it flows out and into the country on the receiving end, it doesn't necessarily compute that way. And so if you're not listening carefully, you can think you're doing the right thing to help people. It turns out you're not. There's a lot of unintended consequences that happen in public policy and politics and so forth. So I definitely appreciate the challenges that you all are facing.
Go ahead, Nance or Damie.
It's especially important that they, what he said is correct, that you go to the right people to get the information, because if you don't talk to the right people, and I think this happens so much in everything that we do.
And one of the problems is that we only have 19 processors left on the Eastern Shore. So there's 19 little voices and that the entire industry is hinging on. And it's hard for 19 people or 19 small businesses to make a change and make an impact. And even the you said, Nestor, that you're going to go visit Jack Brooks with J.M. Clayton. Jack Brooks is the president of the crab processing group on the Eastern Shore. And he didn't get any pickers this year. He got none. And it's all done by a lottery system. So from year to year, these people don't know whether or not they'll have a business.
Right.
And wow. You can imagine how bad COVID is for a restaurant. What if every year these restaurants had to be on a lottery of whether or not they'd have workers? I mean, I can't imagine anybody wanting to go into that kind of a business.
Year to year. Businesses of all sizes will tell you, that sometimes they complain about one rule versus another rule. But what they always say at the end of the day is, just figure out what the rules are, try to make sense of the rules, but give us certainty, because business cannot survive without certainty. You got to plan ahead. You got your supply lines, you got to order things, you have to have inventory. You can't do any of that if there isn't some confidence about what things are going to look like a month out, 6 months out, a year out. So it's the uncertainty that is the most difficult challenge for businesses of any size, but particularly for small businesses, because if you miss whatever that handoff is that represents the life of your business, that can be the end of you right there.
Correct.
And so certainty is really important.
Well, Danny, Congressman John Sarbanes here, Don Mohler, a former Baltimore County executive. We're visiting at Fadley's. It looks like Fadley's because I have these delicious crab cakes. It's the beginning of the tour. We're going to end and go back to Nancy because we need to talk recipe and talk about the beginning of this. But before, we're going to let the congressman go because he's voting on something. We need to talk HR1. Go ahead, Don.
Well, as the congressman knows, forever indebted for you, Congressman, for, feel like it's Charlie. I don't know if you feel like Charlie Brown, but I sure as heck sometimes feel like it's Charlie Brown and a daggone football with HR1. You're fighting. It was first passed in 2019. Every piece of it seems to make common sense. And Republicans are lockstep opposed to this thing. Do one thing for us, for Bill, Nancy, Damie, all our listeners. Give us again the four dummies summary of HR1. Just break it down as if you were talking to a fifth grade class on a class visit.
Or someone like me, John. Social studies.
All right. So let me try and keep it as simple as possible. In America, when you get up on the morning of the day you want to go vote, whether it's to sit at your kitchen table and fill out an oval on a absentee ballot, or to go vote early at an early voting center, or to show up on election day and cast your vote, you should have confidence that you can get that done without having like four or five contingency plans. And we still are not the gold standard when it comes to that across the country. So one of the big things that HR1, the For the People Act, is trying to do is just make it more convenient for people to exercise their freedom to vote. Early voting, mail-in voting, make sure the polling places are equipped well, because that's the fundamental part of our democracy is the ability to cast your vote. Your vote is your voice. Help people with automatic voter registration, same-day registration, registering online. This is not complicated stuff. It's not controversial. In the last election, Republicans, independents, Democrats used all of these different options for casting their vote. We should try to strengthen that across the country. That's an important part of the bill, particularly because we're seeing an effort to roll back everywhere in the country right now, it seems, people's access to the ballot box. That's wrong. It's un-American. We want to address that. That's one important piece. Second piece. when people go to Washington to represent their constituents, they ought to behave themselves. So we have a lot of ethics reforms, accountability.
That's a crazy idea. Crazy idea, Congressman.
Just behave yourself. So we put all that kind of, you know, we don't want to see conflicts of interest. We don't want lobbyists running the place. Just make sure you continue to represent the public interest, not your own self-interest, not the special interest. So that's important. Third thing is protect our elections against foreign interference, hacking, people trying to undermine our election infrastructure. So we have protections in there. Fourth thing, fix partisan gerrymandering. People hate that. We need fair redistricting everywhere in the country. So we have
what is fair redistricting? Tell me what that means. Does it look like a grid like this, like states in the West and like roads did? I think it would be hard with water. I'll give you an example just of a county. Just go ahead and tell a story. Go ahead.
Congressman, one quick thing, because I love Nestor's question.
Yeah.
Because that does get to the nuts and bolts. Tell us, in your perfect world, how districts would be drawn.
Yeah. Well, look, you can't make every district look pretty because some states it's easy to do because they're squares, right? So you can just chop them up that way. Maryland, you can't draw a beautiful, perfect district in Maryland because Maryland's already a funny shape. Then you run the Chesapeake Bay through it, et cetera.
That's where we get these.
Yeah, exactly. So
We hope.
What you can do is make sure that the process for how the lines get drawn is one where one party or the other is not sort of leaning on the scales. That you're drawing the districts in a way that comes up with an even number in each district within a state. And the process for doing it is nonpartisan. You have independent standards that govern that. So then when the districts are drawn, the people in them feel like, hey, my voice was respected. This was a fair process. It wasn't one party or the other leaning on the scales. The politicians aren't choosing their voters. It's the other way around. And that's how it should be. And we set up these independent redistricting commissions all across the country under H.R. 1, the For the People Act. And the last thing, and this is in some ways the most important, people are so sick of feeling like big money, special interests, insiders, super PACs, lobbyists are calling the shots on how policy gets made in Washington, because that makes everyday people feel like they're getting pushed to the side of their own democracy. And too often, that's what happens. You elect people, they go to Washington, they get captured by the special interests, they start working for somebody else instead of for you. So one of the key reforms in this bill is to have transparency so we know where all this secret dark money is coming from that's flooding our politics, create a new way of funding campaigns that's based on small donations and matching funds so everyday citizens can kind of power campaigns instead of the big corporations, you know, writing all the checks to members of Congress. So it's designed to lift up the voice of everyday Americans. And here's the last thing I'll say. Out in the country, it's voter suppression that diminishes the voice of the people. We're trying to fix that. In Washington, it's conflicts of interest and big money that tries to diminish the voice of the people. We're trying to fix that. If we can get these reforms through, I think it'll go a long way. Not overnight, because, you know, there's a lot of cynicism out there. But over time, we can begin to restore people's trust in the way our politics operates, and they'll feel like their voice is the one that is being heard. Like voice of a small business like Fadley's is getting the attention it deserves in places like Washington instead of these big multinational corporations calling the shots all the time. This is just about lifting up people's voices. We listen carefully to what people wanted us to do, and we put it together in the For the People Act. Now we just got to get over the finish line. We want to do that in the next few weeks. It's a tricky path, but we're not giving up. I kind of say like what we're doing is we're climbing the mountain, and every day it gets a little harder because the winds blow more ferociously the higher you go up the mountain. The air gets thinner, but we're getting closer to the summit here, and we're not going to give up. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that. I do want to tell you, let me tell you an incredible story though. So, you know, when you send out these emails, political email, you know, it's done according to, you know, this big database or whatever. So, you know, it'll say like, hey, you know, hey, Don, wanted to get in touch with you and tell you about my campaign or something. So apparently I am in the database in Michigan as Honorable John Sarbanes, H-O-N. So one day I got an email from Alyssa Slotkin, who's a congresswoman in Michigan's 8th District, which started, hey, hon. So I called her up. I said, why am I getting this email? I said, it's perfect. It says, hey, hon. And we figured out it's because it meant to say honorable, but it just said H-O-N. So I got email. So now all the emails that come to me from Michigan politicians start with saying, hey, hon.
It doesn't get more Baltimore than that. Before you have to run, we're going to stick around, I know, with the Fadley's folks. You have to run and vote. Before you do run, thanks again. And two quick ones. Can we do it without reforming the filibuster? And second, on a scale of 1 to 10, where is your optimism that we'll actually get some action on HR1?
The first question is no, we can't do it without fixing the filibuster. So that's got to be part of the solution. I'm at about a 7 right now. I'm very optimistic about this. And part of it's just because we can't not do this. Like, too much is at stake. In November, Don, Nestor, and the Fadley's crew, the American people really reached out and pulled our democracy back from the brink. But in January, with the attack on the Capitol, I think we saw that what we pulled back from the brink is still pretty fragile. It needs a lot of care and attention. It needs a lot of fortifying. That's what this bill could do. It could begin to strengthen the foundation of our democracy again and restore people's confidence. So the stakes could not be higher.
Well, maybe you get Joe Manchin a crab cake. What do you think?
What's
Joe
that?
Manchin, if you took Joe Manchin a crab cake, you think that's the deal breaker?
Might be.
I think if we did that and we offered to rename HR1, the Joe Manchin is a Great American Act of 2021, we could get it done. But let me tell you, whatever it takes, we're ready to do it. So if we need to arrange a shipment of crab cakes to West Virginia to get this thing over the finish line, we will let you know.
I'll drive him out there in August. I'm going out to like Cumberland and Oakland, places I've never been. That's part of the crab cake tour, is seeing the state and doing things I've never done. I have had many of these. I'll let you go before you. I want to. Are you in the Capitol right now? Behind?
No, I'm in my basement.
I wasn't sure. It looked like old school. It looked like a Get Smart episode. I kind of liked it.
And I just want to say for the record that it is not okay for Nestor to sit there and keep lifting up these crab cakes.
I'm promoting the business. I'm promoting small business.
It's actually abusive, Congressman. It's actually abusive.
Right.
Have some good
votes
today.
You guys know where to get them.
Yeah.
Congressman, we appreciate you. Get everything done down there. We'll see you soon. Well, the next time we do it, masks off, come on up. We'll have a crab cake at Fadley's, okay?
HR1 people, write your Congress folks. Let's get it done. Thank you, Congressman John Sarbanes.
All right, take care, y'all.
Thanks, John. We appreciate you. Congressman John Sarbanes joining us here.